It is the biggest game in a decade for Irish football, and if we win it, it will be followed quickly by an even bigger game. The prize for winning both is a place at this summer's World Cup. But there's Trump, Infantino, and the war in Iran, and it's all overshadowing the whole event and making some people ask, do we even want to be there? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. Italia 90, USA 94, Japan and South Korea 2002. For Irish football fans, and indeed for the whole country, these are treasured memories. Just the mention of these tournaments can provoke incredibly evocative and joyous bouts of nostalgia. We're talking grown men crying here.
This kick can decide it all. The nation holds its breath. Yes! Sheridan. Baresi, onto it comes Houghton. And Houghton with the shot, and it's there! Ray Houghton! Forward it goes again by Kinsella. Quinn heads on. Oh, surely this time for Keane! And Ireland do it! Robbie Keane! Look at these scenes! Just look at these scenes!
And this summer, Ireland could again be gracing world sport's biggest stage. But some feel that this time it's a bit different. Perhaps the joy is not as unconfined as it was in the past. FIFA, the supposedly apolitical administrators of world football, have firmly hitched their wagon to the US regime. That move has been spearheaded by the sycophantic behaviour of their president, Gianni Infantino, who even saw fit to create and then award the inaugural FIFA Peace Prize to Donald Trump.
We want to unite. That's what we do here today. That's what we'll do at the World Cup, Mr. President. And you definitely deserve the first FIFA Peace Prize for your action, for what you have obtained in your way. But you obtained it in an incredible way, and you can always count, Mr. President, on my support, on the support of the entire football community or soccer community, to help you make peace and make the world prosper all over the world. Thank you very much, Mr. President. The floor is all yours. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. This is truly one of the great honors of my life. And beyond awards, Johnny and I were discussing this, we saved millions and millions of lives.
US support of Israel's actions in Gaza and further afield has evolved from indirect assistance to outright military collaboration. And the result is that the host country of this year's World Cup finds itself at war with one of the participating nations. And that situation has been compounded in recent weeks by President Trump's very mixed messages in relation to the Iranian team's participation. Having first stated that they would be welcome, he quickly followed up by claiming that it would not be appropriate for Iran to take part for their own life and safety. Iran have since threatened to withdraw, asked for a change of venue for their games, and even suggested that the US should be stripped of the tournament. How this will all play out remains an open question, but undoubtedly a tournament couched in controversy and tension awaits. So the question is, do we really want to go to World Cup 2026? Well, joining me now to discuss this are Off the Balls Cameron Hill and Eve Conway, and you're both very welcome to News Talk Daily. Look, I feel like I need to begin this podcast by being completely truthful here with the listeners, because my instinct when I read that headline is yes. Yes, I do. I do want to see Ireland win these two matches. I do want to go and see Ireland play in the World Cup. I do have phenomenal memories of those tournaments that have lasted forever, and I want to experience it again.
But how much of a statement would it be, Ciara, if we decided to shun these two games, to boycott it and be on the right side of history? No? Wouldn't that be brilliant?
Eve?
That's a very strong statement as well. Listen, I feel like we're all going to have to make peace with being a bit of a hypocrite in the next kind of few days when it comes to this match. And I think most of the world is at this stage when it comes to football and this particular World Cup.
Now, I have to say, One other thing about this podcast today and you two as guests makes me feel absolutely ancient, because neither of you have very clear memories of Ireland being in the World Cup, given your ages.
No, I am the ripe old age of 27, so it was just too early for me, 2002, but that's the last time we were obviously at the Men's World Cup. We had the Women's World Cup a couple of years ago in 2023 in Australia, and that was brilliant. But in terms of men's, I remember the fallout more. I remember the kind of couple of years after Saipan and Roy Keane and all the media and the sort of basically memification of that in the subsequent years. But the tournament itself, no, I wouldn't have much of a recollection at all.
You wouldn't either, Eve, obviously.
I was the grand old age of 8 months old when Saipan happened, so I might have been glued to the TV, but I can't really remember it.
And yet, I have no doubt that you know what this tournament means to people, that you can feel almost the energy and the excitement at the prospect of Ireland winning these matches and us being there.
Completely, because I feel like when I think of Ireland's history with the World Cup and people bring up Italia 90, for example, with such nostalgia and such amazing memories, and I have this like vicious feeling of jealousy. How much I want to experience something like that. I mean, my family talks about it, my parents talk about it, even still, and how much of an incredible summer that was. And it's so close right now. It's like two matches away for kind of our generation to have something kind of even akin to that.
My husband has Ireland jerseys from that time, and they are the only things in his wardrobe that have their own designated hangers. They are treated like precious heirlooms that are to be minded for generations to come.
A little bit of plastic over the jersey as well to preserve it for future generations.
Like practically behind a glass box at this point.
Very good. The way it should be.
Okay, so you haven't been at a World Cup. You haven't lived and experienced a World Cup yet where Ireland has qualified. But you were at the Euros in 2016.
Just so happened to be. So I was over there for a French course and hadn't really appreciated any of the sort of major tournament buzz that comes with football. Ireland had qualified for 2012. It was great. But until you're actually in there and you're marinating in the sort of the hype and the festivity and the Irish fans kind of making idiots of themselves, but in a lovable, lighthearted way, that's when you really drink the Kool-Aid and you go, this is absolutely brilliant. I'm fully for it. It helped that I was 17 and I was just coming of age in a number of ways there. But
You wanted to soak up the vibe. You were ready to be part of this tribe.
Oh yeah, just dye me in green paint. Go for it. Let's go. I was totally on board and felt wrong because I wasn't a massive football fan up until that point either. And I felt like I was wearing someone else's clothes. But you get swept up in it. That's the whole point. It's the great thing about an international tournament like that.
Okay, let's, I suppose, go to the controversies that are connected with this particular tournament. Do you feel, because there's been controversies in the past and we're going to come to those in a minute, but do you feel, Cameron, this is different? And if so, why?
Slightly, because you do have, as you've sort of alluded to there, a mix of the old and the new, the classic World Cup controversies that tend to plague every tournament, plus the added element of what's happening with this year's co-host. So, I mean, you're obviously alluding to the US and how FIFA and FIFA's president, Gianni Infantino, and the US president, Donald Trump, have been embroiled in this sort of incredibly uncomfortable embrace the last few years, and especially in the last couple of months with the awarding, as you said, of the FIFA Peace Prize to Donald Trump and his subsequent not very peaceful wars against Venezuela and now Iran. The travel bans that are being imposed on the likes of Iran and Haiti, which are full travel bans to the US, and the partial bans of other participating nations like the Ivory Coast and Senegal. It all contributes to a pretty uneasy feeling around this tournament and what is to come this summer.
And given what Trump has said in recent days about the Iranian team maybe considering staying at home for their own life and safety, you saw that as a bit of a threat.
I think so. It's hard to see how you can read it as anything other than that. And there's been a bit of to and froing since last month when the joint operation by the US and Israel in Iran first took place, and whether Iran would want to participate in the tournament, and their football federation chief saying, we're not going to participate in a tournament in the US. They've kind of rolled back a little bit and said if those games took place in, say, Mexico or Canada, then we would be willing to participate. And Gianni Infantino, who supposedly has the ear of Donald Trump, basically saying in an Instagram post a couple of weeks ago, I just talked to Donald Trump and he said they'd be welcome. And then Donald Trump basically reneging on that and saying, I don't think it's appropriate, as you say, for our own life and safety that Iran should be there. Which again, you can't, I don't see how you read that as anything other than a threat. And listen, you don't want to bear the consequences of turning up at this thing.
And remind people, I suppose, about this Iranian team and what it has taken for those individuals to create this team and to compete at this level.
It was funny, we had a piece on Off the Ball a couple of weeks ago. Owen Shahan was talking to an expert on Iranian football and Iranian football history. And it's not just the men's team that have taken headlines recently. So the Iranian women's football team were participating at the Asian Cup in Australia and wouldn't sing the national anthem because while they're representing Iran, they are not comfortable at all with representing the Iranian regime's stance on particularly women's rights and their overall authoritarian regime. And five of those players subsequently have sought asylum in Australia and have refused to come home because of the consequences that they would face if they got back on Iranian soil. So football has always been this sort of almost counter-revolutionary or counter-cultural tool for Iranians to represent what they feel Iran is, but maybe not what the Ayatollah and the Supreme Command do.
Now, Eve, what the Iranian team has asked for is for their games, if they do go, to be switched to Canada and Mexico to take it out of the United States. They've also asked for the United States to be stripped of hosting the title. So to the former, will that happen?
I feel like it's such a difficult question to answer because of how destabilizing Trump's reaction and statements about this issue have been. I mean, even you're looking back to when this conflict first kind of arose and when it escalated in the past few weeks, his responses to it have changed even in 2 weeks. How will his response change in the next 3 months? You know, how much the Iranian football authorities can trust any promises that Trump makes. But also at the same time, you're trying to balance the political instincts of, well, if we can call them instincts, the political kind of priorities of Donald Trump, along with the political and monetary priorities of FIFA and Infantino, the logistics of trying to change games from, I mean, all of Iran's games are being played in the United States, the group stage games, if I'm correct. The logistics of trying to get those changed to Mexico and Canada. 3 months until the World Cup sounds like a long time, but it's really not when you're thinking of the kind of laundry list of things that need to be done if this was to be changed. So I wouldn't be optimistic about that happening. I feel like it's such a volatile time, and how much you can actually trust what Donald Trump says from one day to another is an entirely different question.
And given Infantino and Trump's relationship, it is, I mean, highly unlikely isn't a strong enough word. It is completely unlikely. It is never going to happen that the United States are stripped of their hosting duties. But there is actually precedent for it, isn't there, Cameron?
I think so. The UEFA have certainly done that in the past as well. I mean, when the war in Ukraine broke out in 2022, Russia were due to host the Champions League final that year. UEFA stripped that and moved it to the Stade de France in Paris, which was a similarly pretty disastrous affair for entirely separate reasons. But there are precedents, certainly at governing body level. FIFA stripping the World Cup of the US being such an important global market for the growth of football and how much investment has gone into that. Much more, it's bad to say, but I would feel at this point, given the sort of the way that Donald Trump has gotten his claws into FIFA the last while, that you would probably be more likely to see Mexico and Canada losing the co-hosting and all of the games going to US than actually the US being taken and stripped of the tournament.
In terms of World Cup generally, we have kind of been here before, haven't we? I mean, I do remember clearly the controversy about going to Qatar, given all of the human rights abuses that are over there. And you've had similarly conflicted feelings back then. But you feel, Eve, that this is really a trio of World Cups now that we've played in countries that make us question morally whether this is the right thing to be doing and supporting.
Yeah, I mean, if you look from 2018, it was held in Russia, then we were in Qatar, and now we're heading over to the United States. And there's a certain element of you need to stand back and recognise there's a pattern here. When when Messi was lifting the World Cup in Qatar, the kind of parade of dignitaries that were up with him and dressing him and making quite a statement with that, it left a sour taste, I think, in a lot of people's mouths. And yet I feel there is almost a kind of a separation. It's very easy for people to say, well, of course, the World Cup was wrong in Qatar. You know, you have to look at the statistics of the lives lost in the building of these stadiums, of this use of slave labor in making sure that this tournament could go ahead. And I think there's a separation between, well, that was obviously wrong in Qatar. People think that the World Cup in the US is somehow different. It's not really. There is still safety concerns with traveling to the US. You look at ICE, the lives that have been lost over there. You look, they're in the airports now. In the past couple of days, that's been happening. And I think if you look even from an Ireland point of view, there has been such noise about should we play a fixture against Israel in the autumn. There's perhaps a stronger call to boycott that game. Why isn't there a strong call to boycott the World Cup in the US? Because people have a mental separation. And that's, again, as I mentioned earlier on, people are hypocrites about it. I'm probably a hypocrite about it. Would I like to see the game against Israel in the autumn be played? No. If Ireland qualify for the World Cup and have to play a game on US soil, as we would against South Africa in Atlanta, yes, I'd like to see Ireland play. It's a really uncomfortable situation to be in.
In terms of where Ireland's games are going to be held, that's quite interesting too, isn't it, Cameron? Because the locations of those games in of themselves can be seen by some as being problematic.
Yeah, so if we qualify, we are due to play our final group game against co-host Mexico at the Azteca Stadium in Mexico City, famously host the 1970 and 1986 World Cup finals, as well as the 68 Olympics, but has always been a really controversial statement and a controversial symbol in Mexico and Mexico City, especially, of government negligence towards the communities that live there. So when it was built, much like other stadiums, say in Rio or in Beijing at previous major tournaments and major sporting events, the community and the local area was totally wiped out and people were forced out of their homes and where they'd lived for generation upon generation. And there's a specific controversy this time because the owners of the Azteca Stadium have bought and own a well that would have supplied the local area of Santa Úrsula Coapa in Mexico City. And they're basically siphoning off a lot of the water supply, which is leading to severe water issues in that community. So not only is it stripping a place of their land and where they've lived, but also it's a drain on the resources of the local community for a tournament that is only going to be there for a couple of weeks.
Ireland doesn't have much of a history, does it, when it comes to boycotting big tournaments, particularly doing so for the right reasons?
Not a great track record, no. The Irish, rather infamously, we went on a 1981 tour of South Africa on the rugby front when most of the other big nations in the world were boycotting them over apartheid. We actually, funnily enough, did boycott the 1936 Summer Olympics for not the right reasons. We somehow managed to come on the right side of history accidentally there. So not because the 1936 Olympics, for those who don't know, hosted in Berlin at the height of the Nazi regime. Ireland boycotted the Olympics because they weren't able to select athletes from the six counties outside of the Irish Free State. So they said, right, well, on principle, we're not going to go. So somehow we bundled into being on the right side of history there, but it had nothing to do with our stance on the Nazi regime.
Okay, so maybe people are sort of hoping we don't look at that story in too much detail, because if you just read the top line, it looks pretty positive, but when you read a bit deeper, that's not necessarily the case. Eve, are there, though, historical examples like past Olympic or World Cup boycotts from either Ireland or indeed other countries that suggest that this approach would work? I mean, is a boycott in any way effective when it comes to creating change, or does it punish athletes, punish fans, and actually do very little to change governments?
Well, it's a tough one to answer. I think for Ireland famously inventing the boycott, thanks you to, I think it was Charles Boycott, who over County Sligo back in the day. It's a complicated one because I feel like Ireland carries very little international weight in a tournament like the World Cup. If Ireland were to boycott, say we...
We're going to boycott. We're boycotting the World Cup that we haven't qualified for yet.
Yeah, exactly. It almost feels like we're jinxing it. But I don't know enough about the history of Ireland boycotting. I don't know if you have a specific example, Cameron.
There's been kind of a lot of internal boycotts. The Gaelic Games, it seems to be quite rife. There was the Cork and Cork footballers and hurlers boycotted in 2003 over kind of a lack of access to resources and better treatment of inter-county players. The Kerry football team boycotted the All-Ireland final in 1910 over rail prices from Kerry to Dublin and basically gave Louth one of their three All-Ireland football titles. So inside Ireland, gosh, we are, you know, We
love a boycott.
Beacons of virtue when it comes to the boycott. But when, you know, the world is watching and maybe we're on an international front, not so much.
Especially, I feel, because it's a very kind of lofty idea to think that we would boycott a World Cup in the United States. But you only have to look at the Taoiseach going over to the White House for St. Patrick's Day. It's not something that I think would ever be on the national kind of to-do list.
But also then we don't know, because we've never established, because FIFA doesn't have any sort of position on this, what would the criteria be for justifying a boycott, or what are the criteria for not awarding a country host status? Is it, you know, are human rights concerns taken into consideration? Is foreign policy disagreements or foreign policy positions taken into consideration? It seems not.
Well, especially if, like, the FAI in Ireland aren't going to boycott the games against Israel, despite there being precedent in the UEFA statutes around Israel violating statutes around playing thwart an occupied territory in Palestine. If that's not course for a boycott at this stage, I don't know what will be. If, you know, Irish delegates of the FAI have voted overwhelmingly in favour of a motion to call on UEFA and FIFA to ban Israeli teams from competitions internationally, and the FAI still don't see that as grounds for a boycott of that game, it's very hard to see how boycotting an entire World Cup will ever come to pass.
Do you think there will be maybe individual protests, Eve, either players making statements or players wearing armbands, or, you know, massive political banners being held up in the stadiums in Mexico and Georgia by Irish fans? Would that be welcomed?
I feel like it depends. For the players, it's a very complicated situation. If we were to qualify for the World Cup, suddenly this is this huge opportunity that these players have worked, a lot of very young players on this team have worked towards their whole lives. If they are told there will be consequences for wearing an armband or displaying a flag, can we ask one singular person to carry the burden of, you know, the feeling of a nation? I feel like fans are more likely to show openly protesting against this World Cup.
I just wonder, right, do people want to hear this right now, Cameron? Do people want to have to listen to all of the issues that you've outlined here today? Are they willing to actually, I suppose, engage in this conversation? Or do the majority of people just want to put on their green jersey this Thursday and wave on the Irish team and hope to God Troy Parr does it again?
No, and that's part of the problem. I think a lot of people want to focus and will focus on the football and the footballing merits of an international tournament, unless things get to a drastically bad level. The only World Cup I can think of in living memory that's remembered for all the wrong reasons is 78 in Argentina, when the military junta was in full force and the Dutch players heading to the final that day were bombarded by fans outside the stadium, basically tormenting them and causing what is essentially a farce of a final. That's the only time I can think where the football's been overshadowed. We talk about Qatar. We still remember the good football from Qatar and the good football from 2018 in Russia. They don't want to talk about it. And unless something massive and potentially catastrophic happens at this World Cup, that's probably what it's going to be remembered for here.
Will you watch it? Will you go?
Will I go to the World Cup? I'll watch it. I won't go.
Yeah.
Is that a political stance?
I think it wouldn't feel right to be actually attending the tournament. I'd watch it from afar, but even if the games were in Mexico, I don't know. I'm kind of sickened by the whole FIFA thing, to be honest.
Eve?
Yeah, I've no any real desire to go to the United States in the next few years. If there was a game in Canada, I maybe would be more tempted if I could afford it. But I feel like I echo what you say about FIFA.
So you don't feel the same about Rory McIlroy playing in the Masters in Georgia?
This is what I was thinking about yesterday. We have this kind of, not that football is being held to a higher standard, but are we going to be talking about boycotting Rory McIlroy's dinner in August, which is also in Georgia, which is where we're playing in should we qualify in the group stages? It's complicated, but I feel like the money and the political corruption happening in FIFA at the moment does just make it so uncomfortable as to be sort of Yeah, I'd be unwilling.
But you know what really blew my head recently was Sepp Blatter's comments. He voiced concerns over the marginalisation of political opponents and violent crackdowns on immigrations in the United States.
It's bad when we're thinking of the halcyon days of Sepp Blatter's reign as FIFA president, isn't it?
Are Ireland going to make it, Eve? This conversation could be in vain.
If you ask me on Monday, I have a very different answer to if you ask me yesterday. If you ask me tomorrow, I'll have a very different answer than if you ask me today. It's purely how I feel waking up in the morning. And I'm waking up this morning saying, maybe.
Okay, I need more positivity than that, Cameron. I only want to hear optimism. Don't be raining on my Ireland parade
okay,
now.
I won't do that. I think we win in Czechia. I think it's very hard to see us, even if we're at home against Denmark or North Macedonia, to win five games in a row and get to the World Cup. But I am totally willing to be proven wrong.
Finally, do you think, is there any chance that Infantino now is regretting getting so closely aligned with Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think it'd probably be the other way. I think Trump is starting to go, just cool it down there with the sycophancy there, Johnny. But I don't know, maybe Johnny will someday wake up and realise that Trump treats his friends or will treat him the way he treats all his friends, which is eventually with a bit of a discard and bye and see ya and don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Well, that is it from the podcast today. Big thanks to Off the Balls, Cameron Hill and Eve Conway. You can listen back to every episode of News Talk Daily on the Go Loud Player. For now, from me, Ciara Doherty. Goodbye.